We have your attention. We're going to begin the program. Of course, I want to welcome everybody. Thank you for coming. And Chazal say that a very interesting statement: "Gedolim tzaddikim v'misasan yosem v'bichayen." That the tzaddikim, the righteous people, are greater in death than they were in life. Which, at first glance, how could that be? It doesn't seem to make any sense. I mean, how can a person be greater? What does he do in death that makes him greater? However, I think the idea is, and that is, it's talking about the human perspective. It's with that is, there's a certain problem, there's a certain defect in terms of how we appreciate important people in our lives. That when they're with us, when they're alive, we tend to take them for granted. Very rare that a person, his full greatness is appreciated while he's alive, because there's always some negative elements and we don't appreciate and we take for granted. However, what happens is that when a person is no longer with us, then we recognize the gap. There's an absence, there's a void, there's something missing in our lives. And we start to look back, and then we begin to appreciate all the things. That's why there's a process of avelos. You can't grasp it immediately. It takes time. And as time goes by, certain things happen. And you remember, just we were learning with Mitch the other day, we're going through a sugya, and we mentioned Danny would have really liked this. He really would have enjoyed this. So that's one of the reasons why, even after the Levaya and so on, there's a Shloshim. And as time goes by, more things come to light. Chazal say that whoever runs after kavod, person runs after honor, it runs away from him. And whoever runs away from kavod, the kavod runs after him. The truth of this can be seen in the life of Rev Daniel, Zichrono Levracha, Rev Daniel. I was just not, it's amazing how many, there's a lot of askaros that are being held. I mean, of course, we had Levaya, and we had a lot of Hespedim, and then the next day, the teachers and the rabbis that worked with him, they had an event, and everybody expressed their, and then we're having this tonight, and tomorrow in Seattle. And tomorrow in Seattle, it's very interesting. The people in Seattle are gathering, it'll be on Zoom, to talk about their reminiscences. It's interesting to note he was the principal of the elementary school for 6 years. And then the high school, he started the high school. But we're talking about 45 years ago. About 45 years or so since the Rosenthals have been out of Seattle. Jen, it's very rare that 45 years later you have, where you happen to be, they're going to have get together and have memorials. It's a very, very rare kind of a thing. And I think it illustrates this point. There are certain people that I've met that to be remembered is very important. The idea that they may someday be forgotten is problematical to them. And they do a lot of things in their lives. A lot of things they do, they may not even be aware of it, they do so that they'll be remembered. Okay? But the Rav Daniel Rosenthal, I don't think that was a feature. I don't think that mattered to him. I don't think he ever thought about being remembered. He was a person who was rodef min hakavod. He ran from heaven. He wasn't interested in being the center. He wasn't interested in being honored. He was a genuine individual who did what he did because he loved it. He served God out of love. He wasn't trying to be remembered. He didn't care about anything like that. It never occurred to him. And that's why he's so remembered. He ran away from kavod, and kavod keeps running after him. And there's another askara. There's another remembrance. You see, it shows you the truthfulness of this chazal, that he had certain unique qualities, and he didn't try to project them. He wasn't trying to get them noticed. He was genuine. He loved the people. He loved Talmidim. He loved to teach Torah. He loved to start yeshivos. Somebody referred to him as the Johnny Appleseed of Torah. He started yeshivos. That was his essence. That was his nature. He ran away from kavod, and the kavod ran after him. So tonight we're going to have some people who are going to, as I said, it's a different perspective. A lot of the things you couldn't say right at the lip was too soon. It hit you like a bolt of lightning. Now, with time and remembrance and perspective, we'll get other dimensions about the truth. Zecher tzaddik livracha. So I want to call first of all on Truma and say a few words. Rav Daniel.
Thanks for coming. I'm sorry there's some people I called later and they didn't even know that I had forgotten the connections with Daniel altogether, so I'm glad they came nevertheless. when I spoke to Danny about the Shloshim, to Penny, sorry. I spoke to Penny about
That'll be impressive.
the
That'll be impressive.
about the Shloshim. I said, what's necessary here? I'm not familiar with these whole proceedings, all this kind of thing. So he said, no, you've really got to take a memory and a message. That's what it is. You've got to have a message. So what I'm going to do really is I have a few memories, and I hope you get the message. I think I'll push the message. I think it's very important. First of all, everybody knows, or some people will know the funeral, that Danny became, I'm not going to go into every detail, but Danny became from at 8 years old. And that was one thing he did, eight years old. Then he went to his, I'll be very quick. Then he went to his, with his grand, he lived in Mamaroneck, and his grandparents lived in the Bronx. And there he went to a Hasidic shtibl, the rabbi of whom was the cousin of the Sotner Rov. And he got interested, and he was going always there, and he had a good friend there, Nachman Cohen, and went through the shtibl, and he got interested in Hasidus. And when I met him, actually, I had never heard of such a thing. I mean, I knew, I came from a Yekesh shul, and Hasidus was like as far as way possible as you can't throw a grand piano, you can throw a grand piano closer than you can from the Hasidus from Moshe. But anyway, so he went, so he was interested in Hasidus, and that would, he liked it. But then he goes to, so when he went to finish a day school, he went to Tells. The rabbi, his first rabbi, Rabbi Tendler, said, you need to go to Tells. He went to Tells. He was there. Now, that's as far as Hasidus as you can possibly get. Then it was looked upon, very looked down upon, and he went to Tells. Not terribly happy, but 2 years straight. And he went there for 2 years straight, and he learned something there also. He learned, first of all, he learned about Hasmada, learned how to push yourself and to take it seriously and to really work. And he did very, very well there. Although he had difficulties being a Baal Teshuva, it's not so simple when you're in Tells and they're in the 50s. But he, okay. So the next thing, long shirt, he goes to YU. Who did he meet in YU? He meets, goes to the Shear of the Rav and Rabbi Soloveitchik, and he gets into the Shear right away. He's that good. And he learns from the Rav, the Brisker Derek, and the idea of philosophy, and also the idea of thinking about that we can include secular knowledge in a perfectly fine manner and be, a Torah mitzvah. This was not a stira. And then go on further. And then, okay, I've got to keep track. He went to a lot of places. And then he comes to Israel. Then he comes to Israel. Now he meets, I'm a big steer right there. He meets me. I'm very large. He was very short. And I just tall. And he was, now he's very tall and he was quite short. And also, I'd gone to an English high school and I'd learned Latin and Greek there. And I read Plato in the original. And he learned Plato in English. And philosophy, I wasn't interested in philosophy, but whatever. That was a little big thing. And then we got married and so on. So next big major point was Winnipeg. Winnipeg in the 60s was a bit of a, understand the 60s, if anybody here remembers the 60s. And it was a bit of people were involved in a drug thing, and LSD was a choice. And the idea was also a combination of LSD and how to reach a Kaddish, experience the essence of a Kaddish Baruch Hu through LSD. I mean, I'm not making a joke here. That's what the idea. People were into Hasidus and the idea of spirituality. For me, that was something extraordinary. I came from Yekesh Shul, and that's not is a Yekesh thing. It's Maisa. Yekesh goes Maisa. Torah mitzvahs and Maisa. The idea of spirituality and Kedusha. And all, I never heard it really there. I must say, maybe I missed something. It could be. But it was something, a whole new experience. By this time, he was wearing a bekeshah on Friday night. Penny had payas, and he had a psharanish. He had his nine yards. He had that whole thing, and people strummed guitars for a great deal of time there. And then at Yom Kippur, people took a little drop of LSD to strip away the veil. I do remember that. And I didn't do it. Believe me, I was scared stiff of that stuff. Anyway, whatever. And anyway, and then he learned Tanya. There was a rabbi there who was very who was very into Chassidus. Chassidus is there are thought processes. It's not a stum, what you see nowadays. There was a real thought there and chokhmah and of a different kind. And he learned with this guy, for the rabbi there, for the whole time he was there, pretty well. They learned Tanya, very interesting Tanya. So that was there. So moving along, and then you go to, and then we go to Seattle. Seattle was a different thing. Him now by this time he'd reconnected with Rabbi Israel Chaitin, and all of a sudden in our life, the Rambam sort of popped up, and it was there. He was there, and Rabbi Soloveitchik as well. But this sort of took over. Bekshe disappeared, and he hired teachers who had a completely different approach to education in terms of not exactly text oriented in that sense, cover like Gemara, give people a chance, ask any single question. And so on. And this was a whole different approach. Again, a different approach. Also in Seattle, I should say, Danny's interested. What's the latest? What not the latest, but there's a chachma here. What can I hear? What can I see? What can I learn? And then in Seattle it was the 1970s, and the feminist movement was very big. Seattle, everybody is taking every progressive notion is still there in Seattle. Like about anyway, but feminism came up. The idea that a woman that a girl should also learn. It was sort of foreign territory, really. And he was persuaded to take girls into the high school, and so they did. It was a tremendous thing. I think my daughter Babe benefited from it, and at that time, but I was not in the picture then. And then that was the thing. He took it seriously. He had an idea of women in religion, but what real religion to me, you just do the halacha and you just that's what that's your job, and don't quit and it's not into well it changes tune. And I remember as we moved on to New York that we started learning together. And our Shabbos lunch, Shabbos morning. And kind of, a neighbor used to come in, and we used to start learning. And the kid and the girls, I think, girls really benefited from it. And that little side issue, the fact that I was had a secular background, and I have a pretty good at being an English education. I have a pretty, erudite sort of background in literature and so on and so forth. And not that he took to literature, but he realized the value of it. He realized the value, and that had to when he drank and he read. When he set up the school, YOH in Seattle, it had to be top class quality English education. Be exposed to all sorts of things, and the staff was remarkable. Fast forward again, so now we go to New York. New York, he starts TASC, Torah Academy, Suffolk County, and that's again the boys and there were girls. They had the same limo, the same ideas, the same approach. I was in there, and which was a tremendous success. So now, fine. So after a while doing that, building the school, we decided to go to Israel. We had a thanks to the two gentlemen over here. We had a program. He was part of a program which was senior educators, and they he was he decided to go on that program. And that's had a whim, as it were. He was fed up raising cash for the Torah Academy of Suffolk County. It was getting wearing him down. And this sounded to him a good idea. If you'd ask him, when we got married, I remember I asked him, are you going to live in Israel? Oh, sure. They lie. We're not a Zionist at all. And so here we came to Israel, and that was it. That was the thing. He looked at it differently. Was able to see an idea, was stuck into an idea. He saw something, one thing he always remembers, and he's told this story many times, but he went into Bar Ilan, and there, I think Rav Simon gave a class in Ibn Ezra. And he said, this, the government pays for this. He couldn't get over it. This somebody's going to something, a medieval parshan, how's it going to be? And he was so taken, and I also had my feet when I get there, certain things just grabbed me. We decided, I can't remember having a meeting, we just decided we're coming back. And So how did they really become his chibur? So because we went to the apartment, which is the size of here, and a huge TV in it. The picture this big. I said, there's something wrong with this TV. Let's get rid of it. And what are we going to do now? So I went to Opan, and then he took the, we as you know, when you go on sabbatical, you only take one of everything, can't tell your whole library. So he had this one chumash, and he enlarged the pages, and it was like enlarged the thing so I could read it properly. And that really made a lot of difference. And I and we started learning, and it never stopped. So in the ideas, again, this whole thing of looking something differently and another idea, and maybe it has something good in it, and we'll chop it, and we'll keep it, and other things you don't like, and you throw it out. It doesn't make sense, maybe it's not something which you can swallow. It'll it's I'll chuck it. And I think it was very open to that. I don't say to have an open mind, so your brain falls out, say this little line that's really said. But the truth is, something you got to think. And there's not, in my opinion, I know there might be a diversity of opinions here, but there is not only one idea which has all the answers. And I think he has a feeling there. He ended, you know, his life with this, obviously again very close to Rabbi Chait and the ideas, but he was able to incorporate other things. In terms of the lifestyle, in terms of the way we live, a certain, I think, a little, not Hasidish, but we, you know, we sang little tunes, and he used to tell the kids Hasid Shemaises. The certain thing was still there, and he was able to swallow it and incorporate it. And that, for me, was which I thought was a tremendous thing on his about him, that he was able to take things and look at, think about it, and not be stuck into one idea. And that to me was I think is a huge thing. For me, I gained, it's measurable what I gained from being his wife. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, Menachem, this man was a long time. Yeah, yeah. Long time, Chavrusa.
Well, my connection with Rabbi Daniel Rosenthal, I know you, I have a loud voice, you'll hear me. My connection with Rabbi Rosenthal was Torah. And we met many years ago because we both davened in the 730 minyan in Beit Knesset Ohel Rivka. And we developed a friendship. And we decided several mornings a week, 4 mornings a week, we were going to learn together. We were both adherents, Talmidim of Rabbi Soloveitchik. I was a couple of years older than him. And what we did was we took the material that either the Rav himself had written or many, many people wrote things that they heard from the Rav. And we went through it. We did all kinds of things. Usually before the Chagim, we would do material which was related to the Chag. And that's what I wanted to talk about for a couple of minutes tonight. Because the last time that I learned with Rabbi Rosenthal, we used to learn until COVID, we used to learn face to face in the Beit Medrash of Ohel Rivka 4 mornings a week, Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Tuesday, I had a shir in Merkus Harav. So we didn't learn Tuesday, but we learned for almost 20 years, Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday. And we would sit there after my wife, we'd bring down some cake and coffee, bananas. He loved bananas. And we would have some bananas and some cookies and coffee. And we would learn the material from Rav Soloveitchik. And the last Sunday of his life, we learned on the telephone. And what we learned was something from this book, which is called Mo'adei HaRav, put up by Rabbi Pick of Bar Ilan, one of the people in the Institute for Higher Torah Learning, which we call the Kollel of Bar Ilan, and some friend of mine. And there are two things in here about Purim. And that's what we did about Purim. So I know it's the schut of a person who passed away to say Divrei Torah. So I want to tell you very shortly what the Rav said about Purim Katan, which is tomorrow and Shabbat, Friday and Shabbat. And I highly recommend this book. There is an English translation, by the way, came out in Hebrew, and a few years ago, Rabbi Pick, who's also a Talmid of the Rav, translated it to English, and you can get it. It's in English, also called Mu'adei HaRav, and it's an excellent book. He has a collection of shiurim about all the different holidays, including Purim. So the Gemara says about Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel that ain bein Purim Katan, the Purim Gadol, the Purim Rishon, the Purim Katan. I have it written down here, but it says Ela Kriyat HaMegillah Matanot LeEvyonim. It's Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, and the Rav in the first shir about Simcha Yimei Purim, the Rav explains that there are two kinds of Simcha. There is a positive Simcha, which is having a Suda and doing all kind of things. And there is a negative Simcha. And what Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel is talking about here is the negative Simcha. We, on the days of Purim Katan, the halacha is that you don't make a Spedim and you don't do a Tanit. And it's a very extreme thing because the Rav points out in the Rambam says in Hilchos Nedarim, that somebody who made a neder, for example, to fast on a certain day of every month or on, let's say, every Monday, Purim does not push away this thing. You cannot fast, even though you made a neder to fast, you cannot fast on Purim Katan and on Purim Gadol. And the first Purim Katan I'm talking about is Purim and Adar Rishon. And that's what we were learning about the negative, the aspect of Simcha. And the Rebbe explained that where did Chazal understand that there's a negative aspect of Simcha? From Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh, you know, we say Chatzi Chale. He always corrected me when I said Chatzi Chatzi. Rabbi Rosenthal was very medakteik about how you pronounced Hebrew correctly. And in the base, it says, "V'yom simchatchem u'mo'adeichem u'roshi chodeshechem." And that's in the Beis HaMikdash. So in the Beis HaMikdash, Rosh Chodesh has a Torah, a Doraisa aspect. But the Rav points out that there is an aspect all over the world of Rosh, and that's the negative aspect of Simcha, that you cannot make a Spedim and you cannot do a Tainis on Rosh Chodesh anywhere else. Even though the positive aspect of saying Hallel is really limited to the base of Mikdash, we say Hatzi Hallel outside, but that's just a minute. Okay, so that was the first thing that we were learning that morning. And the other thing we were learning is a very interesting question that the Rav asked. Why do we say V'atah Kadosh Yoshev Tilot Yisrael after the Megillah? It's a very unusual thing. We daven Maariv on Purim, and then we say Kaddish Tetkabel, that's the end of the Tevilah. And then all of a sudden we read the Megillah, and then after the Megillah we say V'atah Kadosh. Why is Atah Kadosh there? So the Rav gives an interesting insight into this thing. I don't know if if it will impress you, but where does the Pasuk V'atah Kadosh come from? Pasuk from Perek Chof Hey in Tehillim, the capital of Vayelat HaShachar. And Chazal and the Gemara and Yuma say that capital of Vayelat HaShachar is totally talking about Purim. And that's the reason the Rav said, it's in here in the book, that's the reason the Rav said that the Atah Kadosh was put in after the Megillah. Otherwise, there's no connection really between it, because that Pasuk is a quote from Ayelet HaShachar, and the Perek Ayelet HaShachar has to do with Purim. I just want to finalize that Rabbi Rosenthal, the last time I saw him was Friday night, Parshat Bo, the week before he passed away, the Shabbat before he passed away. And I, the first time, maybe the only time, spoke in Ohel Rivka after Kabbalah Shabbat, between Kabbalah Shabbat and Maariv. And I spoke because I, for many, many years, put out a compilation of the Rav's things on Parshat HaShavuot, taken from a million different sources. The whole thing is now up on YU Torah called Lekhet Panini HaRav, 57 booklets up on there. And I felt a certain, I don't know if you know that Rabbi Rosenthal was one of the elected Gaboyim of Oel Rivka. He was elected as a Gabay. That was one of his official positions. He was a Gabay of Oel Rivka. And he didn't express it too much, but he was one of the Gaboyim, one of the control people in Oel Rivka. And I told him that he doesn't come very frequently lately to the shul, but I told him I was going to speak that Friday night. So he made an effort and he came to hear me speak. And he gave me a compliment afterwards. My head is still swelling from the compliment. Because what did I do? I had a certain hokara to the people in Oel Rivka, because the whole reason I did that project, which took 9 years of compiling the Rabbi Soloveitchik's things on the Parshat HaShavua, was because somebody in Oel Rivka asked me 10 years ago if there was any material in Hebrew from Rabbi Soloveitchik about the Parshat HaShavua. And there really wasn't. So I started compiling it and distributing it. And one of the people I distributed to, of course, was Rabbi Rosenthal, who encouraged me in this project. And so I felt a certain responsibility. And I said a couple of things in the name of the Rav that night. And Rabbi Rosenthal came over to me afterwards. And he gave me the biggest compliment anyone could ever get. He said, you know, he said to me, I thought I was listening to the Rav. And that swelled my head, and it still does. He was a very wonderful, warm, fantastic person. And I had the schut of being his chaver b'torah, his chavrusa b'torah, for almost 20 years. And I miss him very, very much.
I want to thank everybody for coming, and I want, of course, Makar Tov to Rabbi Mann, Rebbetzin Mann, for opening their home. But as mentioned, I don't want to, since I listened to Rabbi Mann's point just as he opened, I also want to express publicly, listening to Amba Ada, that I came to Yeshiva Bnei Torah in September 1985, into Hushir, and I have one of the greatest honors of my life, calling him my Rebbe. And we've been learning consistently for the last 30 years, 38 years. We learn about every Sunday, so a tremendous gift. Thank you so much. I appreciate you now, and we're not going to talk about the Amit Rajana. We'll also have some appreciation. So I can envision, if my father was here, he'd be happy to see everybody because he likes everybody in the room here. But he would ask me the following, was it really necessary? We need to do this. It's like a little too much. It was a little self-effacing. So, and then, so that'd be his initial reaction. It'd be a reaction number one. And then he would go into his rabbi, Daniel Rosenthal, and said, all right, Penny, what is the source? What are the shlok? This is very, you know, even though that he, as my mom said, he had some affinity to a, you know, some Hasidic things, let's call it Hasidic tendencies, okay, mostly not existent in the later part of his life, very much in the early part of my life. But he would then his halachic philosophical side of him would come and say, what is the point of such an, you know, what is the halachic source or nature of such a gathering? I mean, it's always good to get together and have cake with friends. I mean, that's nice. But what is the substance of that? What is the nature of that? So this is what I would tell him if he was here. This is what I would show, look called Mastik the Minna, to articulate what are we trying to accomplish. So the Rambam in the 13th chapter of Hilchas Avil, he closes the Halachos, and he says a number of fascinating things. I'm just going to mention just one. So he says, really, what is the goal, objective of Avelos? So certainly there's an aspect of grief therapy we call Kavod HaChayim, helping the people go through a difficult time. That's one aspect. Certainly there's Kavod HaMeis, to show honor in regard to the person. But the Rambam actually thinks of something which people are not so associated with. And the Rambam says as follows. He says it like this. He says, oh yeah, anybody who does not observe the laws of mourning, as the rabbis commanded, is an achzar, is cruel. That's a very strange term, because what is cruelty? How's that? You say a person's not observant, you can call him a chote, you might even want to call him a rasha, but you wouldn't call him an achzar. So that's number one odd thing. And then he El Yafachev Yidag Yifashiv of Maith Yachab Chuva. Rather, what should the Avil do? He should be afraid, he should worry, he should investigate his deeds and return to Chuva. And then he goes on, the Echem Nechabura, anybody of the friend group, not just the Krovim, but anybody in the B'nei Chabura, who is that? About a year. Tidak Kol Chabura Kula, Kol Shlosh Yamen all should be worried. So the question is, why have to be worried? What is the idea? So the Avelis provide is a structured program which allows the person to navigate extreme emotions. You have one aspect, which is basically you want to deny the reality. You know, something my mom always tells a story about, she went to a person at work who father died that day or the day before. So what is the term achzar? The Rav explained that the idea is that achzar is a cruelty. To not recognize the significance of a person and what they stood for and what their values were and to deconstruct what they were about, to understand the anatomy of their nefesh, what was their value, what was their virtue, what would they stand for, is in, that level of indifference to the person is simply cruel. In other words, the purpose of the shiv and the shloshim is to take the person, as I said in the Hesped, to unscroll the Sefer Torah of the person and understand and read from his Torah, what was he all about? And learn from that. Why? So we would get the benefit, so we could be a fashion of myself, so we can be lifted, we can be a better version of ourselves. So the purpose of of our shloshim here tonight is to have reflections, as I said to my mom, a memory with a message, where we can talk about what my father stood for, what was he all about, and to learn about it. And what's the idea of the pachad and the daiga? Is that, look, the reality is that there is a part of us that does not want to accept a very unfortunate reality. And that reality is Misa. What is the question that people give you at my sister, Babe, made a very sharp observation during Shiva. There's always a question people like to always want to know, very much as a tremendous focus during the Shiva. You know what that is? How did they die? Were they sick? How old were they? Were in the hospital? You know, okay, the reality is they're dead. So what is the fascination? Because as my Rebbe, Rabbi Jake, says, people like to view there are two clubs. There's the living club and there's the dying club. The dying club are for the losers. I'm a winner. I'm in the living club. And I want to find out exactly how did this person end up in the unfortunate circumstance of being part of the dying club. The amount, the power of the fantasy of immortality is immense. And you want to deny that. And halacha does not allow you to do that. As Rambam says, and halacha says, in front of the mace, you can't talk about anything other than the mace. You can't even learn Torah. You've got to be locked in. As Koela says, Tolech is the base of Avel. Better, because a certain amount of reality recalibration is healthy for our growth. We don't have an infinite amount of time here. Are the priorities that we have aligned with the amount of time that we have? And if you knew that you have the time you have, would you be doing what you're doing to the quantity that you're doing? That is a healthy question to ask. That is the purpose. That's why the Rambam says, Avelis and the Shiva and the Shloshim afford an opportunity not limited to the Rovin, but to all the friends who have an identification, have a Kesher. That Hayom Kana Machar Bekever, it's not a pleasant reality, but it allows us to recalibrate how we, the vector of our life. What direction do we want to be in? What kind of person do we want? Because we know that we have a lot less time than we imagine we do. And that is a help. Now, to dwell on that constantly and to be paralyzed by the grief, that is depression. That's not helpful. But to a certain extent, and the Rambam gives a metaphor of the sword. For the first 3 days, the sword is on your neck. I suppose for the Karov, for the Krovim, and for the Chevra. And then for the 7 days, it's in the corner. And then for the rest of the time, you see it occasionally in the marketplace. The idea of going to the kever and experiencing the shiva and the reality of Misa has to be part of the general, so-called the background radiation of your life, to become cognizant of that, to be able to ensure that we are living in the best way possible. And I'm blessed. I mentioned this at the Shiva, at the Levaya, and said, I won the Torah lottery. I had a fantastic Abba. I feel that way. And a tremendous, I learned a tremendous amount of things with my first Rebbe. And that, I would say to Abba, that is what the benefit of having children. The cake is delicious, but the message of having memories with a message and to help people to bring out, be the best version of themselves is why we're having our gathering tonight. Thank you so much for coming.
On someone who learned with was a chavrusa, also like Menachem, was also a chavrusa of Rabbi Rosenthal, and now I joined the group years ago when I came here, and that is Rabbi Mitch Rosen.
Okay, Morid Rabbi, Rabbi Nahum, and the Rebbetzin. I joined in the yeshiva in 75 in the high school, and have the privilege since then. And Baruch Hashem, in the last few years, being very close and being able to learn daily. Didn't have 38 years like that.
Okay.
Years, and then between, et cetera. It's not, no, it's not. Baruch Hashem. Menachem, now I know why, I got the Tuesday slot. We'll come back to that. Because that was open. You had the other days covered. So, I said a couple of things during the Shiva week when I spoke to the yeshiva, and I'll just read a couple of the words. I was zocheh to learn with Danny. Lydia said, my wife Lydia said, when I didn't want to make Aliyah, and I said, I'm not going to find chavrusas. That's the YBT. I'm not going to find the derech. And they said, don't worry. Lo and behold, a few years later, the Rosenthals popped in, and I was set for life. Baruch Hashem. So I also had the tremendous schut and benefit of learning with Danny for close to 25 years. We learned, it's an interesting thing, speaking about the different things, and you know, a lot of the Rav, and we all learned a lot of Rav with Danny, but actually, I don't know whose idea it was, but we wound up learning things which are like over there, such as, besides the Harari Kedems, such as some of the Svarim that I just brought here for decoration, means Kohelet with the Rav Sadia Gaon, and Eov, for years we learned Eov, and Mishlei, three rounds of Mishlei. One was when I was here, and Rabbi Chait told me, I was feeling down. He said, learn Mishlei with the Meiri. Then the yeshiva days with Rabbi Moskowitz, Al Hashem, so I learned there. And then the last big chunk, of a few years, we learned Mishlei, Be'iyun, with the Meiri and with other Mefarshim. So these in Yanim areas, interesting areas, that he was involved with about, Shelot of Mashmaut, the things of meaning and hard questions. I take the writing in my Svarim, and I'm glad for that, because all over the Svarim I find places. Danny said this. Danny asked this. As a matter of fact, in the Mishlei one that I opened up, I found this from 2016, learning with Pini and Danny, and some interesting questions and who asked what. The Mida. Whom said, pick something to focus on. The Mida that came to mind over the past day's reflection about Danny was steadfast and plodding and patience, zitzfleisch, and reviewing, especially in the areas like Kohelet and Eov and Mishlei, and live with questions, because there's always going to be questions in these areas, questions about justice, about life, about history. The Shoah came up, the Holocaust came up in various, intersections. I learned this from him. I continue to learn this from him and need to keep learning it. He did not want to move on to another area until we did justice to the issue, whether there was a sugya or an idea or a question. As I leafed through a few of the Svarim that we learned, so I came across in Mishlei, And it's apparently from 2000 and two. In Kohelet, I saw we were learning it in about 7 years ago. Mishlei was in more recent years. And at the beginning, Pitom I see from nowhere, Danny's asking one of the questions I said. Danny Shoel, Danny asks, Eifo lomdim musagei yesod philosophy. Where do you learn basic ideas in philosophy? And who really knows these areas, and who really studies these areas? I don't know if I was just zoche, to be in this tkufa, if he, was involved in these areas probably all of his life, but it was a tremendous focus on it in the years that we were here, and I think it may have been his, choice to learn these things. And then a few pages later, right at the beginning of Perek Aleph, Miyad Dani Omer, immediately Dani says, Nivdok et Rav Kook be'en ayah. Now, I don't know how often he said that. Does anybody know what the Enayah is? It's a Rav Kook's parish on two masechtot, on Brachot and Shabbat. So I said, and I wrote the page down. He said, we got to look at this. I said, okay. And it was this, right at the beginning of Mishlei. So I'm trying to work this all out. And the Ma'amar was, Amar Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Gadol excuse me, Im Talmid Chacham no nokem v'noter kinachash, hu chagreo amotnecha. All right, if you have a Talmid Chacham who is very vengeful and harif and sharp, so then wrap him around, keep him on board, put him on board, and then Imam Haaretz, hu chasid al tadur b'shkunato. And Rav Kook says that a person's nature of being pleasant and nice can be for many reasons. Some of them are inborn, and some of them are because of his environment. And he says, it also can depend on a person's philosophy about the world, about life, and reality. And he goes on to analyze things. I think that was remarkable. That I just found this, and it spoke to me about the idea of being thoughtful, of being patient, not reacting. And I'll come into a story in practice, besides in the learning aspect of being patient and not leaving an inyan. I used to come over to learn on Tuesdays, Menachem, and it was always on Tuesdays. I worked in the morning in dentistry until 1, and then I came to learn with Danny in the afternoons. But as any of you who know me, Rebbe, and my schedule, if it was often later than planned, sometime in the afternoon, or maybe you remember. But Danny never got upset, and sometimes he might have wanted to take a nap, but he was waiting for me with patience, sevar panim yafot, a pleasant countenance. And he didn't give me a really not a bad word and not a bad face. This went on for a little while. And then Lydia said, this is crazy. Switch your day. Work in the afternoon. Go learn in the morning. So that's what we started to do. And then I don't know if that was before you had your days, Malcolm, or whatever, but I got the Tuesday morning in. From then on, we had great coffee and fresh learning. I want to really express my tremendous appreciation to Danny, to the family, for the opportunity to have learned with him and to keep this midah of patience, of being kind, both in learning and ben adam l'chaverah. It's a tremendous milah, and we'll keep learning from it.
I want to thank all of the speakers for very, very interesting anecdotes and different aspects of his life, different shades. And it's my hope and prayer that this is not the end of the discussion. I think that the memory of Rav Daniel Rosenthal will keep coming up on various occasions when we're engaged in certain discussions and so on and so forth. that a person who lives righteously does not just live in terms of his own life, his own existence, but he creates something, and that what he creates, it lives on, and it's a source of blessing for his children, his family, and his grandchildren, great grandchildren, and so on. But not just that. I think in the case of someone like Rev Rosenthal, he's more than a private individual. He's living a life in terms of concern for Klal Yisrael. Everything he did was for the benefit of Klal Yisrael, and nobody can really calculate the benefits. When a person does the righteous thing, he has no idea what the benefits are. Maybe you gave somebody good advice. Maybe you were makari of someone. Oh, it's not what, just one person, but that person had an effect upon other people. And that's exactly the story. People, you know, people share their impressions. Oh, what Rosenthal meant to me, and I would not even be Jewish today. I wouldn't be religious today, and so on and so forth. So it's an exponential type of a thing. You have no idea how many people he affected, how many people he influenced. And that should inspire us. It's not just to remember like a biographical thing. It's for the sake of elevating us. Inspire. We need role models, especially the world today as it is, so filled with corruption. We need role models and people to turn to. And what did he do in this situation? And we should be the same way. So it's my hope and prayer that Yizichro Baruch, that the memory of Daniel Rosenthal should be something which goes on and on, which lasts and has a tremendous impact on Klal Yisrael for all future generations. Thank you very much. All right, so what we're going to do now, the men, we're going to go down Ma'ariv now. And like myself, it was tough to do a Kiddush Levana. This year I haven't done it yet because of the rain and everything. So we'll try. I'm assuming, I hope, then afterwards we'll go on the deck. Okay, so you'll see all of you, Shalom, and we'll do Kiddush Levana if a moon is available. All right, so we'll dive in about a minute or two.
My wife
So they're just the right, yeah. So both of you, I need to watch the judge, but they both have been. Yeah, no, that was awesome. I was like prospect. We davened already.
Right, we have 69 davened.
If you haven't met yet, you have to have. No,
okay, yeah.